Hi, I'm Nancy Mendoza, Director of Communications and Membership at the Canary. Welcome to the first of two episodes of Canary Pod this week. On Sunday, we'll be discussing the awful events at Grenfell Tower and the political fallout, as well as a High Court ruling against Theresa May's government and their benefits cap. But now, onto this bonus episode about Theresa May's Queen's speech. It's safe to say that the Conservatives have found themselves in a challenging position following the surprise results of the election. So I'm talking to Ed Sykes, one of the Canary's editors. Ed's been looking at Theresa May's Queen's speech this week. Ed, this has been sort of quite hotly anticipated. We were left after the general election with a hung parliament, and it looked quite clear that Theresa May was going to try and form a minority government or possibly a coalition with the DUP. She was straight off to the palace, to Buckingham Palace, to speak to the Queen after that election to state her intention to form a parliament, and to do that, she had to put forward a Queen's speech. Now, that's been heard in Parliament this week.
In a statement from Jeremy Corbyn after the Queen's speech, he called the Queen's speech a threadbare legislative programme from a government that's lost its majority and apparently run out of ideas altogether. He said, "This is a government without a majority, without a mandate, without a serious legislative programme, led by a Prime Minister who's lost her political authority and is struggling even today to stitch together a deal to stay in office."
Goodness, well, we could end the podcast there, couldn't we? But let's go a little bit more into this Queen's speech and have a look at, you know, what's been included, what's not been included. Take us through that.
Okay, well, it's a lot easier to talk about what's in it than what's absent, because what's in it is pretty meaningless and vague as a general rule. Boris Johnson said in his disastrous interview on the 21st of June, he basically admitted that lots of things from the Tory manifesto didn't appear in the Queen's speech because the Tories had done so badly in the elections.
The Conservative Party and the ambition of this government.
Thank you. Let me turn to the policies which less than 2 weeks ago won the support of 13.7 million voters, ditching the pension triple lock, reforming social care, energy cap, 100 new free schools a year, an end to the ban on selective schools, a free vote on the Hunting Act, changes to the winter fuel allowance. 13.7 million people voted for these policies, and poof, they're gone.
Well, you know, I'm not going to hide it from you that the election did not turn out exactly as we would have hoped. But as you know,
didn't you win the election?
Well, we are certainly the largest party, and yes, we did win the election in the sense we are 56 seats ahead of the second party, that's the Labour Party. And so it's our job to form a government if we possibly can, and to get on with what I think is a very progressive Queen's speech.
And what's in it really is Brexit, 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 Brexit.
So I think I'm right in saying that 8 out of 27 bills are on Brexit. Actually, is there anything specific that Theresa May has said in this Queen's speech that she is going to go after for Brexit?
It's incredibly vague, essentially. If we didn't know anything before the election, we're none the wiser now, essentially. It's just the same old platitude, securing the best deal, whatever that means. But there's nothing really specific. She just mentions the areas like immigration and agriculture and trade and customs, but it is very vague.
So we're really still none the wiser of what a Brexit negotiation is going to comprise. And you know, the kind of hubris of Theresa May after this election that, you know, I think at best we can say did not go the way of the Conservative Party, that she feels that she still has a mandate and still has the strength of leadership to go into this negotiation is quite frankly astonishing. And we heard her say as well on the Channel 4 programme Battle for Number 10, when she was being interviewed by Jeremy Paxman, she did eventually, after a classic Paxman, you know, saying the same question however many times, somebody should count that actually, see whether she's beaten the previous record. But she did eventually admit that she would consider no deal if an appropriate deal, you know, the best deal, as she says, the deal that, you know, she thinks that we want as a country isn't on the table, that she would consider no deal. So that, you know, potentially we're still in a position where Brexit might not happen.
I think she probably has no real mandate to do that now. I'm not sure that the DUP would support her with that, because of the obvious problems that no deal would probably bring for Ireland, and all of the historic issues that could potentially bring up. I think the DUP would definitely not favour a no deal situation. Mm. And the Tories obviously couldn't pass that themselves, because pretty much the whole opposition would be against that no deal situation.
So is it your view then that the opposition now are absolutely firmly saying, look, we've had a referendum, the British people have voted to leave the EU, or at least, you know, a majority of the people who voted to leave the EU. And they're saying, well, you know, we've got to do it. We've got to follow through on that.
I think the Lib Dems' performance in the election suggests that there wasn't really that much appetite for going against the referendum decision. Mm. Even if lots of Lib Dem supporters would be completely against leaving the European Union, I think generally there is an acceptance that it was a decision that was made and it's going to happen. It's now about ensuring the best deal for British workers. Mm. And obviously the Lib Dems are in chaos, and they're the main party who would potentially be talking about trying to not go ahead with Brexit.
Or to have a second referendum.
Yeah, I think a second referendum is perhaps slightly more likely, but I still think it's unlikely.
So basically, looking at 8 of these 27 bills that have been included in the Conservative Queen's speech, a whole 8 bills is still leaving us potentially not really in a situation any different than the one that we're in now. I mean, it just seems like a completely untenable position. But let's move on. Let's talk about some of the other bills that were included. What else have we been told that we can hope for with a Conservative government?
Okay, well, there are 5 things I'd like to cover. The first is talking about the economy. And the Queen said, my ministers will strengthen the economy. Not really sure what they mean by that, because under the Conservatives, we've seen a real fall in living standards and real wages for ordinary people. I'm not sure that many British workers or citizens would agree that the economy has been strong. And particularly with the promise to continue to improve the public finances, which was another part of the Queen's speech. We have to consider the fact that under the Conservatives, debt has risen and they have failed to meet their promises on eradicating the deficit. So both on the economy and on public finances, they've shown themselves in the last 7 years to be useless. So they're essentially promising something that we know they probably won't fulfil.
Hmm. There's certainly no track record there. And there doesn't seem to be a plan to, you know, improve their ability to actually deliver that.
Yeah, I think all of the details of the promises of the Queen's speech will come out in due course. But the Queen's speech itself is very vague and very empty and meaningless in many ways. And another area which is very empty and where we can't really believe them, is on education, where they say they'll continue to work to ensure that all schools are fairly funded. And note that that's very subjective. What does fairly mean? What does the word fairly mean? Note that she didn't say properly or completely. She said fairly funded. And what's fairly funded to a wealthy Tory is not necessarily fairly funded for an ordinary worker in Yorkshire or Birmingham or Manchester or Wales or Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to a teacher who I know recently who said, you know, they literally don't have the money to buy glue sticks for primary school children. You know, my memories of primary school was of having, you know, lots of time to create and to kind of develop my own kind of style of communication and artwork and to play and to learn through playing. And, you know, for me, you know, painting and collaging and papier-mâcheing and all of that was a really important part of it. And, you know, something as simple as that, that we, you know, we can't even deliver for our very young children, you know, and that in the context of this kind of relentless testing regime and the pressure on teachers to report constantly and to meet certain kind of criteria without being given the resource to actually develop those children in a way that they can meet them. It's just astonishing. And it sounds like, you know, probably not a lot's going to change. Fairly funded. I mean, what does that mean? We have a total amount, you know, written on the back of an envelope and we divide that by the number of pupils and, you know, we get 6.8p for breakfast is what we get. You know, that's a huge letdown. And interestingly as well, I mean, one of the flagship policies that the Conservative Party have had over recent months has been the reintroduction of grammar schools. And I'm right in saying that was completely absent from the Queen's speech.
There was something very vague about ensuring that all children can get into a good school. It's obviously not a mention of selective education or grammar schools, but again, it's very subjective. What do the Tories mean when they say a good school? Because for many Tories, a good school means a grammar school, because that's where lots of Tories went when they were kids.
Or fee-paying education, indeed.
Yeah, exactly. But essentially, in Britain today, for teaching professionals who are some of the most valuable workers in society, I have no qualms with saying that, they have consistently complained that there has not been proper funding under the Tories. We've had head teachers writing to parents to tell them that they don't have enough money and that the Tories are really undermining the education system. And complaints have been consistent throughout their time in power.
It is absolutely shocking, but it also seems to be very consistent with, you know, what we've heard all the way through. You know, the Conservative Party are clearly not serving the interests of young people. They clearly don't have an interest in how we build our future as a country, because if we're not investing in our young people, if we're not enabling them to have, you know, even a good quality basic education, let alone open access for all people, regardless of socioeconomic background, to higher education, you know, if that's something that is going to be valuable for those people, you know, there's nothing there. And I think that, you know, that was borne out if you look at the age distribution of voting in this past general election. You know, the Labour Party really took an enormous proportion of the 18 to 24-year-old vote. And, you know, you've got to ask yourself, really, you know, what's important to those young people? Well, you know, they're there looking forward to the whole of the rest of their lives, and they want to build a good life for themselves. And part of that is going to be through education and training.
And just to point there that there is nothing in the Queen's speech for young people. there really is nothing to, and that's precisely because the Tories know that their voters are not young people, so there's no point promising them anything. That there's a sort of meaningless promise about building more houses, but the Tories have failed consistently to build enough houses to meet demand.
They've not marginally failed in meeting the targets that they've set. I mean, the numbers that of the houses that have actually been built versus the number promised is tiny, and the number of those houses that are actually affordable or are social housing is absolutely pitiful.
Minuscule, yeah.
So, okay, so nothing there for young people. Very vague statements that sound nice about education, but no substance to them. What else?
Let's mention some of the slightly positive things, if we can. One of the only good things is a promise to increase the national living wage. Whether it's going to be a real living wage or just an increase in the minimum wage is not clear, but any rising wage for ordinary workers is good. But it's just the extent to which that will happen that is in question.
So forgive me, I'm struggling a little bit to understand the difference between a living wage and a minimum wage. So is, you know, we're saying it's not clear whether the Conservative Queen's speech is talking about increasing minimum wage to a certain level versus, you know, what was in the Labour manifesto, which was a £10 living wage. Can you just explain to me the sort of the difference between those two?
Well, the living wage is something, it's an informal concept. It's not legally enforceable, not a legally enforceable minimum level of pay like the national minimum wage. So the minimum wage should naturally be rising, but the question is, do we take the leap up to a proper living wage where workers can lead a decent life? And another thing is that the Tories have still committed to adhering to the Paris Agreement on climate change, even though the Tories' record has been absolutely dismal on the environment. Mm-hmm. And as Caroline Lucas said after the Queen's speech, the failure to promise anything meaningful on the environment is either because she simply doesn't care about the environment or because she's been influenced by what Caroline Lucas said called the DUP dinosaurs. Because you've obviously got some very prominent climate change sceptics in the DUP.
Well, I think we've called me a conspiracy theorist, but I think, you know, we've also got to recognise the fact that, you know, the current government is looking more and more like a corporatocracy, if that's the right phrase. You know, the interests of big business in circumventing some of the restrictions placed on them by various bits of environmental legislation, you know, must be a huge pull. If what you're interested in is profit, then, you know, having to reduce your emissions and to act responsibly is going to cost you money. It's going to affect your bottom line. And I'd be very surprised if there wasn't some influence going on there. It's very difficult to prove, of course, but, you know, we follow the money.
Yeah, essentially. And for both the Tories and the DUP, that's the kind of agenda they're following. What's good for big businesses. And the director of Friends of the Earth Northern Ireland said a few weeks ago, I think, that the DUP are very much a deregulation party in terms of environmental protection. Mm. And that's we could say the same thing about the Tories as well, because in the last 7 years, they've been committed to deregulation and pushing forward fracking permits, even in national parks.
So we can't really genuinely hope for much. I mean, it's, you know, it's something that we will remain in the Paris Agreement. You know, it's very clear that the US is planning to withdraw from that. So I guess our special relationship may also come into play there with the USA. It'll be very interesting to see whether and how Trump's climate change denying sensibilities have an impact on that relationship.
I think possibly if Theresa May had won a majority, she may well have followed Trump down that path of leaving the Paris Agreement. That's pure speculation, but I suspect that if she had a majority, she might have considered that.
Gosh, that's a terrifying prospect. What else have we heard that we can expect from the Queen's speech?
Okay, again, another area where we can't really believe them is on defence. And they talk about, in the light of recent terrorist attacks, that the counter-terrorism strategy will be reviewed to ensure that police and security services have all the powers they need. And obviously, in the last 7 years, they haven't had all the powers they need. Very clearly. There have been cuts to the police, cuts to fire services, even to the army. It's just ridiculous for Theresa May in particular, having been Home Secretary previously, to say these things, to have the cheek to say these things, really.
So, yeah, I mean, under Theresa May's rule in the Home Office, I mean, we've seen 20,000 police officers cut. We've seen cuts to the army. You know, clearly, you know, there isn't provision for the sort of response to security threats that the Conservative Party say that, you know, they want and they plan for. It seems unlikely that that's going to change. You know, where does that leave us? What else are we dealing with?
Well, obviously, one of the issues to do with terrorism and behind terrorism is British government policy abroad, which is something that Jeremy Corbyn is one of the big voices challenging the traditional British foreign policy on its links to terrorism. And in the Queen's speech, we've got the government saying it will work to find sustainable political solutions to conflicts across the Middle East. But the fact is that the Tories have proven themselves over the last 7 years to be useless on Syria and Libya, actually sort of contributing very directly with the absolute chaos in Libya.
And we've got arms sales to Saudi Arabia, which, you know, implicates, potentially British arms in the attacks on Yemen as well.
Yeah, that's another big issue that the Tory government has been, for the last 7 years, committed to bowing down to their anti-democratic friends from Saudi Arabia to Turkey. They've been useless on the war crimes in Yemen, useless on the state atrocities in Turkey, useless on a whole host of foreign policy issues. And it's just laughable to hear them talking about finding a sustainable political solution, because they haven't been doing that.
Well, and what does that even mean? You know, are we talking about, you know, going back to 2003 and very generously bringing democracy to Iraq, which, you know, clearly we now know was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Tory strategy does not appear to be negotiating. Theresa May is useless at negotiating, very clearly, even though that's one of the things she hoped to win the election on. She's terrible at negotiating, and I don't think the Tories really have much interest in negotiating. They would like to install regimes abroad that are favourable to the interests of British corporations or of their best friends.
And what does that mean for ordinary people? I mean, I know we've seen, you know, the pretty poor offering to Syrian refugees wanting to come to the UK. But, you know, in future, what does that mean for ordinary people in those areas affected?
Oh, it means more destruction, more death, more chaos, more unrest, and more conflict, unfortunately.
Gosh. So really, more of the same.
Yeah, I don't see any real change in this area. I think there'll just be continued deterioration of the situation. I can't genuinely see any real steps being taken to end the hypocrisy that's been at the very centre of Tory policy, of putting business over human rights in numerous countries abroad.
That's just astonishing. I think everything in this Queen's speech is, you know, it's absolutely literally conservative. It is seeking to maintain the status quo and to maintain that status quo for the people who primarily benefit from it. It's really, it makes me so sad and so angry. It's just extraordinary. I mean, you know, again, we heard, you know, throughout the general election campaign, many examples where, as Home Secretary, Theresa May has actually just blatantly failed to meet her own targets. Immigration is an absolute classic. You know, they said they would, you know, reduce immigration to the UK. You know, 7 years ago, when the coalition government came in, they would reduce immigration to the UK to under 100,000, and that hasn't happened. It hasn't happened by quite a large margin.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another example of where you can't really believe their promises.
So where does this leave us? I mean, there's been talk and rumour that, you know, the Labour government might propose an alternative Queen's speech, or they might make amendments to this current one that's being proposed. Could that still happen, or is the horse bolted now?
I personally think it's not very likely. Even if we would want to get rid of the Tories, I think the DUP are playing a bit of hardball probably with the Tories, but I think some sort of deal between the DUP and the Tories is likely to get the support necessary to leave Theresa May in government for now.
So that would be enough votes to pass the Queen's speech, is that right?
Yes.
So we've got, you know, at least we've said a fixed term parliament, haven't we, for 2 years. So we've got two more years probably at least of a Conservative government. So what can we do as ordinary people who are interested in improving the way that our world works to making a society that is fairer, that gives people equal opportunities and equity in all areas of their life? Now, what can we do in the context of, you know, a Conservative government which is, you know, it's lost credibility? The election was designed to create a mandate, and, you know, if anything, it's done the opposite. But we have to kind of accept the democratic process has happened, and this is where we are. What can we do to challenge some of this and to demand some clarity about what we can expect?
Big question. In the run-up to the election, we consistently put in our get involved sections at the end of our articles on the Canary to discuss the key issues with family members, colleagues and neighbours, and essentially to organise, to join and participate in the activities of unions, activist groups or even political parties. Whatever you feel comfortable with, you need to get organising. And Corbyn may not have got in power this time, but he obviously broke records in the sense of increasing Labour support, more so than any Labour leader since Clement Attlee, I think. Mm. And in order to keep this momentum going, people do need to organise, either through a union, through an activist group, or through a political party.
And do you know what? I'm personally actually very hopeful and very optimistic about that, because the result of this election has absolutely shown that people, particularly young people, and let's face it, you know, those are the people who are our future leaders, have responded really strongly to hope, to compassion, you know, to ideas and policies that seek to, you know, create a world where, you know, nobody is left in the position of having to go to a food bank because they can't afford to eat, where no person with a disability is being denied the benefits that enable them to have a fulfilling life where they can contribute to society, and you know, a whole raft of other issues, which, you know, more austerity politics, more conservative government in terms of policy, in terms of the political machine, is likely to compound. But what we're actually seeing is effectively a movement that has got behind hope and compassion, and that makes me actually really excited. It makes me tremendously excited. And just, you know, just in my own kind of world, in the people that I interact with, and I interact with people, you know, who have a massive variety of backgrounds. I'm the Canary's token Oxford educated person, but you know, that doesn't speak of the kind of circles that I mix in. And what I'm hearing is, you know, people are hopeful. And people don't, you know, we've proved now, I think, that people don't respond to fear. They don't respond to, you know, the kind of narratives of austerity where, you know, we've all got to tighten our belts. You know, no, nobody's buying that anymore. So I think, you know, despite this kind of toothless attempt at forming a new government, and, you know, probably the chaos which will continue for some time, I think, you know, a grassroots movement that just goes about organising in communities to improve the quality of life of all people, it's happening already, and it's hugely powerful. So, you know, I'm disappointed, obviously, in the Queen's speech. I'm disappointed that we've still got a Conservative government, but personally, I'm feeling quite hopeful. How about you?
Definitely. It's... Again, it wasn't the ideal result, but it was probably always very difficult to be able to break the stranglehold that the right-wing corporate media have over many people's minds in Britain. The kind of papers that smear and fear and hate and express that to the whole country. Is obviously difficult to break, but that stranglehold is being weakened. It is being weakened, and we can help to weaken it even more. And the weaker that stranglehold gets, the more chance we'll have of getting a better government, a government of hope and compassion and change. So I think one more thing that I would add to the call to organise in a union activist group or political party would be support the new media. Whoever you want to support new media organisations which are committed to breaking this stranglehold that the right-wing corporate media has over the British press today and has had for decades.
And keep reading The Canary, obviously.
Exactly, yeah.
Ed Sykes, thank you so much for your time and for taking us through what's been included in the Queen's speech. There's a lot of food for thought in terms of where we go next, and I'm personally very excited to see what happens. Thank you very much.
Thank you.